TCAR para donar este fin de año. KPFT Houston.
Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Just reminding you, tomorrow is the last day for early voting. So depending on where you are, what your precinct is, you will have different things on your ballot. On my particular ballot, all I have is the recapture voting initiative. But if that's all you've got, that's still a really important thing, because down the road, that's a multi-billion dollar initiative. So let's not do one of those things where 10% of the voters turn out and half of them decide which way a ballot initiative goes. Tomorrow's the last day to early vote, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Go to harrisvotes.com. You can find an early voting location near you. You need to have the proper ID, which they describe on the site. Voting license is simplest. Driver's license, rather, is simplest, but there are other IDs that will do. It has to be a photo ID, or you'll have to cast a provisional ballot. The general consensus, I'm not saying the unanimous consensus, the general consensus is this is not the same as the recapture vote in November. This one, we're buying credits. The city is buying credits as opposed to detaching property. So over a few years, it will make a difference in savings to the city if you vote yes, of hundreds of millions, perhaps $1 billion over a period of 5 or 10 years. You can go to my website, thinkwingradio.com. I've got links to a bunch of articles and discussions, and I've got a couple of Charles Kuffner pieces. I've got an HISD article. But this is really, really important. If you're a taxpayer, which technically everybody is, you really need to go to vote and hopefully go to your ballot and see what it is you're voting for at harrisvotes.com. You put in your last name, your first name, your street address, and it'll show you your specific ballot, whether you've got any people to vote for or any other initiatives to vote for. Katie has some. So you just have to check. harrisvotes.com. 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. tomorrow, last early voting day. After that, Election Day is May 6th, which I think is a Saturday. And you have to check. Don't take my word for it. And I believe that voting hours on Election Day are 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. So I'm not. I went into that in some detail last week. Unless someone asks me, I'm not going to spend your time on that again. But do go to my website, thinkwingradio.com. Check out the various links there so you can see the discussion. Find out where you're going to vote, early vote if possible, blah, 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 blah. harrisvotes.com, thinkwingradio.com. That's my thing. Okay. This is open forum, so you can call about stuff I discuss or anything that has crossed your mind or your eyes that you think is worthy of some discussion. 713-526-5738. Okay, looking down at some of the news here. President Trump said Monday that he would be honored to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, quote, under the right circumstances. On Saturday, he said that he would also be pleased to have a visit to the White House from Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte. Despite the leader's controversial war on drugs, this is a quote from the article, that has resulted in the deaths of thousands of Filipinos. And Spicer also tried to explain that visit in the broader context of the situation with North Korea. Now, I understand the complexity. I mean, Duterte, even before Election Day, I was calling Duterte the Philippine Trump. I could see what he was doing and what he was like, and I could see that him and Trump, not that different. I don't know if Trump has actually ordered or condoned murder. There's no evidence to that effect. But in other ways, he and Duterte have a lot in common, and I think that their core value is essentially they don't think highly of democracy. You know, you've got now our president, our regime is talking about, oh, we don't like the First Amendment. We really need to put more limits on free speech. So, I mean, these guys are, you know, kind of soulmates. He's expressed admiration for Duterte. Trump has expressed admiration for Kim Jong-un. You know, it's not unreasonable to have government-to-government meetings between the U.S. and the Philippines, between the U.S. and North Korea. What is really unprecedented is to have two leaders like this with such serious issues that we have with their countries, their governments, and invite them to the White House. A White House visit is usually something in diplomatic parlance that you have to earn. And it's usually after agreements have been made and secretaries and ministers have agreed on things and there have been some discussions. Or maybe if you're going to have a head of state meeting, you do it in a neutral location so they still haven't actually met at the White House, which is usually at the end of the yellow brick road, so to speak. Okay, so there's that. Again, we have open lines. Jerry, I'll get to you in a minute. 713-526-5738. I've been reading some science papers lately, which made me think a lot about nutrition and how nutrition affects long-term success in life. And the question that I pose to you, to myself, is from generation to generation, the poor tend to stay poor. Why? Well, the school lunch program, according to the new budget that was passed, which will keep things running through September, yay, the new spending agreement ends a program championed by the former First Lady to combat childhood obesity that forced changes in school lunches served to about 31 million people. Republicans say the legislation, quote, stops an Obama-era school meal regulation, and that doing so provides, quote, flexibility for whole grains and milk and preventing changes to sodium standards that have not been fully scientifically vetted. Now all of a sudden they're interested in science. You know, the papers that I've been reading, it's not stuff I didn't know. It's more like stuff I've been reminded of. Without proper nutrition, your teeth don't form properly, which leads to problems later in life, dental problems, which affect health, earning capacity, feelings of well-being. Anyone whoever's had a toothache knows what I'm talking about. Anyone who's ever had a tooth extraction without the money to have a bridge or an implant replace it, so now you've got holes in your bite. You guys know what I'm talking about. Poor dentition and inadequate dental care is a big health deal. There's a matter of getting enough of the proper fats to enable neurological growth. Not just neurons like in the body, but brain growth, the capacity of the brain to learn and function and reason. And in the growing years, if you don't get proper nutrition, the proper fats and vitamins and proteins and minerals, that literally cripples you for life. It can stunt your growth. It can stunt your mental, not only your mental development, but your ultimate mental capacity. It can affect your immune system in the long term. It creates an underclass that is literally, organically, biologically challenged to get ahead. This is separate from actual education. This is separate from actual parenting. So to not put a serious focus on early childhood nutrition or even middle childhood nutrition for the state, both the federal and state governments, local governments, for the state to not take an interest in early childhood nutrition is essentially a guarantee of having an unproductive or semi-productive underclass. Just look at it economically, you know, national self-interest, and people who will have more medical problems, people who will die younger, people who will leave unsupported families because of poor health. You know, this has ripple effects. So it's always a matter of, you know, being penny wise and pound foolish, as they say. You don't put the money in up front, you pay even more at the back end. So it's like if you have a flat tire, you don't stop the car and replace the tire and drive on the rim. Now you're not just replacing a tire, you're replacing a rim. It's kind of the same thing. Okay, so there's that. We can expand on that, actually. I mean, I have kind of a lot that I could say about it. One of the things that we probably want to know, and I did post a link on today's show blog post at thinkwingradio.com, What's in the Spending Agreement? We Read It So You Don't Have To, by the Washington Post, links to that. Apparently, there were no cuts made in this temporary budget to public broadcasting. That doesn't mean, by the way, that KPFT is in great shape, because we're 100% community supported. We're not currently getting any federal funds, but it's great for public radio and public TV generally. You can support KPFT by going to kpft.org, clicking on the donation jar, and contributing whatever you can afford. You know, a few bucks, 50 bucks, 100, 500. Donate a car, all kinds of ways to support KPFT and keep us on the air. You are listening to KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm Mike Koenig on ThinkWing Radio. Bob Gartner is on controls. We thank you for listening, and we have open lines, 713-526-5738. Jerry, you're up first. You're on the air. How are you doing tonight?
All right. How you doing?
Okay, thanks.
Well, you're absolutely right, of course, about the whole nutrition thing, and it's kind of like mind-blowing. There's countries where you can understand they don't have the money, where, you know, where you can sit there and go, okay, we see, you know, that this country has the money, the economic capacity to take care of things like that, and it simply refuses to do so.
Yeah, that's true.
And everything, it's like you said, you know, it's, you know, you can pay me now or you can pay me a hell of a lot more later.
Yep.
And, I totally agree with you on that, but you know, it's amazing to me people don't think about this stuff. You know, and it's like you said, it affects the overall economic capacity of the country.
Yeah, I mean, if you just want to be cold-blooded about it, look at it as a matter of national economic success, you know, benefit versus cost. What do they call it, yeah. FOI? ROI, return on investment.
Return on investment, yeah.
And just cold-bloodedly like that. You know, it's like one of the fundamental differences I have found between liberals and conservatives is, and this is very generalizing, but liberals generally want to do something because they feel it's the right thing to do. Conservatives want to do something if it either helps them or it doesn't hurt them. So to appeal to a conservative mindset, you don't have to lie or distort the facts. You just pick the facts that are still consistent with your argument that apply to them. It's the same. Yeah. It's like you wouldn't use a dollar argument to liberals. You don't use a humanity argument to conservatives. But there's still, you know, you can agree on doing a thing even if you agree for different reasons.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, if you get somebody like Barry on who sits there and thinks that, you know, taxation is basically theft, then, you know, you know, any kind of spending on public stuff like that's, you know, uncalled for. You know, people like that, just like, you know, they don't really understand. They think somehow or another they can escape the consequences of their own action or inaction.
Well, you know, I don't want to single Barry out. Barry is representative of a point of view, and we should be grateful when Barry calls, however much we disagree with him, that he is reminding us that that point of view is out there. You know, it's not just Barry.
No,
Barry represents a segment.
No, and he's more honest.
Yes.
Than what it's large.
I give credit to Barry.
I give him kudos for that. I give him credit for that.
You know, you and I mentioned this, it seems, a lot these days. You know, my 40-20-40 theory.
Yeah.
But that breaks down. So to remind people, 40% of the population will generally vote Republican. 40% of the population will generally vote Democrat, pretty much regardless of the candidate. You've got 20% in the middle, five of which will either lean Democrat or lean Republican. And then you've got the 10% they always fight over, which is why the biggest spread you generally see is 45 to 55. But within the 40 at each end, there's maybe 10 or 20 that are so extreme that really nobody makes them happy. I think that on the right side, Barry is probably at least in the top 10 of that 20%, where he is so libertarian conservative that I don't think he connects how taxes help him. That it's not just the government taking money away, that the government spends the money it takes, and these days, and then some. And that creates jobs, and that creates infrastructure, and the infrastructure creates business opportunities, which create jobs. And it's just, you just have these short-sighted people that can't, they can't see beyond a certain point. And part of our job as liberals, which I mostly am, We have to approach them. When we have discussions with them, we can't beat them over the head with what we consider the right way and reason to do things. We have to meet them at least halfway so that when they pose an argument about why they do or do not want to do a thing we disagree with, we have to come back with our belief system posed in a way they can understand. Otherwise, you're both talking to a wall. Would you agree with that?
Up to a point, yeah.
Okay. At what point would you disagree?
Well, I don't know. I just don't think that, you know, there's a lot of people who are really beyond, and I don't think that that's necessarily the case with Barry, but...
I've reasoned with Barry. I find Barry, when you approach him properly, to be a reasonable guy.
Well, it's not
my opinion. This is my opinion.
25 years of listening to him on KPFT and arguing with him, but...
Maybe it's how you approach it. Maybe it's how seriously you take it. I mean, Barry is good-natured, mostly. He disagrees with you good-naturedly. He accepts your disagreement good-naturedly. And occasionally I have led him to at least small points of agreement. And that's great. You know, you got to start somewhere, baby steps.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you know, the national interest, basically nobody speaks for the, actually Democrats up to a point speak for the national interest, but really nobody, there's not really enough people speaking for the national interest, for the longer term interest of the country, the broader interest of the country.
People have very
representing that.
Well, now, a lot of our representatives have what I would call idiomatically very parochial viewpoints.
Yeah.
Very narrow.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, but I just think that that's ridiculous. You know, when you get into these conversations with people, they seem to like, they never learn, basically. And all that. And you're just like going, you know, show me a single case in history where things worked out the way you said they were going to.
And that comes back to, again, a point I've made that conservatives seem to be more interested in principles than outcomes. And to have Mnuchin talking about tax cuts because tax cuts will make the economy grow 6 to 9% and pay for themselves. You know, we've done that. We did that for like 10 or 20 years. It did not work. So the historical record is there. They don't care. All they care about is their principle and their belief of what that principle leads to. And the fact that that has proven to be incorrect doesn't seem to daunt them. But anyway, yeah. Jerry, I'm going to give you a chance to wrap up, and then I'm going to get on to my next caller.
Okay, great. Well, I just wanted to say, too, that on your thing about the First Amendment, Trump's opinion on that and the rights, him and his people's approach to that, they're going to have to, like, you know, basically this is something that I pointed out that was going to have to happen. Republicans really get a lot of things they wanted, pointed this out in relation to arguments once again with Barry. At some point or another, they're going to have to figure out a way to more or less suspend the Constitution.
Well, you know, they control enough state governments that they're close to being able to call for a state-mandated constitutional convention. I think, what do they call it, an Article 6 constitutional convention, something like that?
I think
if two-thirds of the states or three-quarters of the states call for a constitutional convention.
I think it has to be like three-quarters, yes.
Yeah. And
everything.
And sometimes what will happen is the Senate will co-opt that by passing an amendment resolution, which then goes to the states, and that kind of cuts them off at the knees a little bit. But the fact is, you know, we're really close to that very, very dangerous situation. It's not that I don't think that the Constitution can be improved. But, you know, one of the places that's trying to put this together is Texas. Texas has a constitution that's been amended literally hundreds of times. To me, that ain't much of a constitution.
No, I agree.
And if that's the kind of constitution that the Texans trying to accomplish this convention envision, we are in deep, deep S.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I'll let you go.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for calling, as always, Jerry. You take care. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM. Bob Gartner's on controls. You can support KPFT by going to kpft.org. We can always use your support. If you have never helped to support KPFT, please do. And if you have, we appreciate it. And if you can see it in your heart to help support us some more, we'd appreciate that too. My website is thinkwingradio.com. You can follow me on Twitter at thinkwingradio. And Jeremy, you are up next. You're on the air. How you doing tonight, Jeremy?
I'm doing great. Thanks for taking my call, Mike.
My pleasure.
I just thought it was really interesting that in the first 5 minutes of the show, you'd mentioned the Philippines, and then you'd mentioned, you know, action against or problems with the school food programs here. As I've lived in the Philippines on and off for the last 15 years, and I've often said every time I come home to America, I see America becoming more and more like the Philippines.
In what way?
There's no middle class. There's very few middle class. If you're really a revered person there, if you're a lawyer or if you're a doctor or if you're a teacher or an engineer, because you pay all the bills. Everyone else is either dirt poor, and then 1% of the population is so incredibly rich that they don't even bother with the rest of the population.
I remember reading an article a few years ago, and I can't cite it. But it discussed that there are a lot of, I think it was during the Bush era in the early 2000s, that a lot of people are really struggling in the United States to stay in the middle class, that they really don't have the earnings. You know, we talk about infrastructure. What you have in your house and your life is your personal infrastructure. If a TV breaks, you have to replace it, et cetera, et cetera. And that a lot of Americans are going into debt to maintain a middle-class lifestyle that really their income no longer affords.
Well,
so it's literally middle-class for a lot of Americans. They're literally on borrowed time.
It's out the window. There aren't enough jobs here to support it.
Well, not only are there not enough jobs, but the jobs don't pay enough to stimulate the economy. All the money goes to the top. It's concentrated at the top. That is economically destructive.
Yeah, I just don't understand how people have forgotten how Henry Ford, you know, made his money. He made his money by building a car that the people who worked for him could afford.
And paid them a wage.
Paid them enough to afford,
exactly.
To afford a car.
I think that his mind-blowing wage was $5 a day.
Yeah.
And all his competitors were going like, what are you doing? You're going to put us out of business. We can't afford to pay those kinds of wages. But it's a difference. You know, when you have a CEO who's making several million dollars a year, depending on the size of the company, I don't begrudge that. When you have a CEO making starting around $100 million or $200 million or $300 million a year, and there are people like that, to me, there just isn't a human being worth that much money. And they're acquiring that by not hiring and by not increasing wages. And this goes back to the collapse of unions in America, which used to be able to negotiate for higher wages. And you know, unions, I want to make this clear. Unions are not an unadulterated good. They're not heaven. They have their issues. But on balance, we do need unions in order to counterbalance the power of government and management.
Yeah, I just left my union job for a state of Texas job. And my union benefits were much better.
Now,
I have pretty good benefits having a state job.
Don't state employees have a state union or no?
I don't.
Really?
Yeah, I don't. I don't have a union. I'm an exempt staff employee at Texas A&M.
Okay, so you're like, oh, my wife works in A&M too. She's, I think, an assistant professor. So in other words, you're like what they would call management. You're salaried.
Yes.
So you would be above the opportunity to be in a union, even if there are unions at A&M, which there may well be.
If so, I work in a very small segment of the Maritime College, so it's not. I really don't relate to anything else or understand how anything else within the university system works yet. I've only been here a month.
So getting back to the comparison between the Philippines and the United States, we can talk about economics or we can talk a little about Duterte and Trump.
Well, it just so happens that, I lived for almost 4 years in Davao City where Duterte was the mayor. And the last 7 years up until I took this job in February, I was living in just about an hour north, but in the Davao region, in Davao del Norte province. And what they say about Duterte is generally true in terms of, yes, and I grew up in New York in a very liberal area of Buffalo. And for me to go to the Philippines when I did, and my wife would say, oh, yeah, you have to be careful here, but you'll be safe, no problem, because of the city police. The city doesn't have police. They have traffic management officers. The city police were the euphemism for Duterte's death squads.
Cool.
And it's true that they do exist. But I think that the reason that it'd be nice for Trump and Rudy to talk is
Rudy? Is that what they call him?
Yeah, I've been told. He's our president. People don't know in America, the guy's got an 86% approval rating. You know, the people in the Philippines, the Americans just don't understand that the Philippine court system doesn't work. When you go to court in order to maintain fairness, which there are no juries, it's just a judge, and the judge makes about $2,000 a month. So let's say you're a very big-time drug dealer, and you just got arrested. Well, you can't just go to court. There's no sequestration. There's no jury. There's no there's no witness protection program. So in order for you to go to court, every court date is only one person is allowed to testify for that trial. So even to adopt each of my children, I didn't go to court less than five times to do a single adoption. And when you go to court, you have to listen when you're in line. And the one that was the family court, I sat there with my six-year-old through a witness on a rape case because I was at the back of the line. So if you can only have one witness in each appearance, there's no way to keep the witnesses safe. And then the judge can throw the case out and then they can fly to Australia to their new beach house.
And of course, in a political environment like that, that's an environment that not only calls for a strong man, but requires a strong man to get anything done.
Well, Davao was the Wild West. People don't know that, the revolution against Marcos started in Davao City in an area called Ma'a. And when the revolution was over, there was nothing left. It was a vacuum. And Duterte was a city prosecutor at that point. And he I understand the guy saw the futility of it. And that was when things began, when they ramped up. And eventually, from what I understand, it still goes on. And from what my friends in the town where I live, which is very close to Davao, we do often share the city police if we have a big problem that needs to be taken care of. And it's hard for me to like and wrap my head around the idea, but in my Philippine experience, in a place where the people from Manila told me, don't go, it's so dangerous there. I got to tell you, I've never felt threatened at all. When I go to Manila, I'm afraid. When I go to Cebu, I'm afraid. But in Davao City, anywhere from 3 hours south of Davao City, from Digos, going north from Davao for two and a half hours even. I mean, Monte Vista, out past the Bumtura.
Because that's where the strongman was in control.
Along the highway. Yeah, and it's perfectly safe. It's perfectly safe. You could literally take your 70-year-old mom on a car ride. And even though the State Department website says riding a bus across the island of Mindanao is tantamount to suicide, I guarantee you could take your 80-year-old mom on a ride through and stop along the side of the road, and you'd have absolutely no problem. The people are so friendly and nice.
The obvious difference between a strongman form of government and a law-based form of government is as long as you don't get on the bad side of the strongman, you could be in a very comfortable, safe environment. If you get on the wrong side of the strongman, you really don't have any law to appeal to. That is essentially the difference and the problem.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I agree with it. But I don't necessarily agree with it in the case of the Philippines.
Hmm. Do you think that Duterte should be invited to the White House? Do you think?
Yes.
You do?
Because I think that only through dialogue and understanding can the problems be fixed. I felt the same way.
But understand, an invitation to the White House is different from simply a meeting someplace with the president. They're not the same thing, diplomatically speaking.
Well,
I mean, I know it's hard to wrap your
head
around.
Trump meeting people outside the White House because he's spending an awful lot of money, flying all the security around so he can meet people at resorts and do all this other stuff. I think they already got the security at the White House. They ought to meet people at the White House.
Well,
I really don't. I don't really see that it's a big deal. That's where our president lives.
I understand the logic of that. I'm talking about the diplomatic logic of that. And
I don't think Americans are in a position anymore to be able to say that coming to our White House is somehow so much better than going to Angela Merkel's house. I really don't think so.
Well, Angela Merkel wouldn't invite them to her house unless they'd earned it either.
Let's
put it this way. If you have an enemy or a frenemy, which I think Duterte qualifies as, if you have a frenemy that you feel you need to talk to, do you meet him for a cup of coffee somewhere or do you invite him into your home?
See, that's where I disagree. I don't see how Duterte's...
No. Answer the question.
No,
I'm asking you to answer the question. If you have a frenemy, a guy who you need to be on good terms with, but who has insulted you, insulted your country, insulted your family, threatened your family, threatened to go over to your other adversary, and you feel the need to talk and have dialogue. Would you have that dialogue, let's say, at a coffee shop, or would you invite him into your living room?
Well, I think if my living room was protected in the same way that the White House is, no problem bringing him in.
I feel like you're squishing on me. I'm not asking. I'm giving you a specific situation. What would you do?
Okay.
You can't qualify my situation. My situation is.
Okay, but I don't see how it's germane to the Philippines.
Answer the question first, and then we'll discuss how it's germane.
I would probably have a cup of coffee with the guy.
There you go. That is exactly the scenario. Exactly the scenario.
See, I disagree. I don't see how Duterte is in any way threatened us.
He's a frenemy. He's talked about breaking off military relations with the United States. He's talked about increasing military relations and diplomatic relations with China. He has made the Philippines alliance with the United States not below him. I mean, his military and diplomatic people still feel the same way, but he is the head of state. So usually, inviting someone into your living room is a reward of trust and friendship. He is a frenemy. I don't think he deserves that reward of trust and friendship. And Kim Jong-un? Really?
Oh, sir.
Inviting him into your living room? Our national living room? You know, I don't think so.
I the only way you're ever gonna make way, the only way you're ever gonna mend fences is to make the gesture.
Yes.
So
to
while
talk.
I'm not a Trump fan at all, I don't think it's a bad idea.
I don't think he understands. Well, there's a lot I don't think he understands. For a guy who's been to college, he seems remarkably ignorant. You know, there's a saying, ignorance is a correctable. Hold on. There is a saying that ignorance is a correctable condition. Stupid is forever. This man has had every educational advantage, opportunity, and he still seems to be stupid, ignorant, stupid. He's the most dangerous kind of stupid man, a stupid man who thinks he's smart.
That's
my opinion.
I can't disagree with you, you know.
Okay. Well, so we found a point of agreement.
I don't like talking bad things about anybody.
Well, you know, truth is truth. I believe that's truth. You have to speak truth. But I mean, I appreciate your call. I appreciate your perspective. I appreciate the fact that we found something that we kind of agree on, even though you don't want to be happy to agree on it. So that's cool.
I just think that the American people and the Obama administration also understood that in the Philippines we don't have an infrastructure that allows us to actually fight crime, and that on the island of Mindanao, the money is the politics, and on Mindanao, the Chinese government, they just send methamphetamine to pay the local, what we call captains, or the local mafia heads, for gold and silver and copper that are coming out of the mountains, because the island's a reef of gold. And Duterte has to fight that. And God forbid, if he needs a missile system because it's not safe enough to get the troops into certain parts of the mountains, which is the absolute God's honest truth, then it really wasn't right for the U.S. government to say, oh, no, we don't, we can't sell you that. We're not going to help you keep your people safe. Oh, by the way, we're going to take away $430 million in U.S. aid because, you know, you have your justice system.
Well, you know, I mean,
that was an ignorant act on our country's part.
It's a leverage thing. But you know what? I have to let you go. We've been on for quite a while. It's not that this conversation is not productive, but I need to give other people a shot.
Well, have a great night.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jeremy. I appreciate it. We do have open lines, 713-526-5738. Interesting conversations so far. Could we have Johnny? Okay, Johnny, so I just want to point out we do have open line, 713-526-5738, open forum. So, Johnny, how are you doing tonight?
Okay, Barry, we got open lines.
I haven't talked to Barry in a while. Maybe he's just so happy he doesn't feel any need to really say anything.
He's skippity-doo-da-day.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, he right after the election, unfortunately, he was the very first caller on my very first show after the election, and it was Barry.
Yabba-dabba-doo.
And he kind of rubbed it in my face, but, you know, I get it.
Republicans.
Yeah.
No-brainer coffee shop, and I wouldn't even go to a Starbucks. I'd go someplace cheap.
But you understood the point I was trying to make to Jeremy, right?
Yeah, I'm no Jeremy Trump supporter. When they apologize for that, they're Trump supporters. Come on.
You know, that's complicated. When you pose it that way, that's a little complicated, because there are people that didn't vote for Trump that still hope that Trump can do good for this country, even if not every.
I'm talking about people who actually go out of their way to be defensive or defend Trump. Hello, lots of people like that.
There are people who will defend the president, whoever the president is. There are people that are not necessarily supporters of a particular president who still, you know, contrary to what Rush Limbaugh once said, who still want the president to succeed because they see his success as the country's success. I think Trump is the first president in my lifetime where his success is actually the country's detriment. Even Nancy Pelosi, I don't remember what show she was on, but it's within the last couple of days. She actually made the comment that Trump makes her wish for the good old days of George W. Bush, which a lot of Democrats would agree with that, have been agreeing with that. Because whatever about George W. Bush...
The reasons why I called you. I wanted to explore something that you said in the opening about Donald Trump.
Okay.
But first, I wanted to... what was it that was on my mind now? I should have wrote this down, because that Jeremy kind of derailed me. Oh, strongman. Do you consider Trump a strongman?
I think Trump is an aspiring strongman.
Okay.
I don't even know if he realizes.
Wait a minute.
I don't even know if he realizes that's what he is. I don't know if he understands that what he wants to do takes him in that direction. But the end result of the things he says and wants to do, he is an aspiring strongman.
I think he fancies himself as some kind of articulate notch above Tony Soprano. But when you think about that visual of him at the WWE, where he's in the suit jacket and he's pretending to beat up on Mayhem, the guy who runs the joint, that tells me everything I need to know in light of his past of not going to going to Vietnam and getting deferments. He's a bully. He's a coward. He's a chicken hawk.
He's a bully, and that is documented through much of his life in school and whatever. He is a bully. Now he's an adult verbal bully. He's a financial bully, and there are stories that he gets mobsters or other unsavory people to actually make death threats against people that either want to sue him or testify against him. He is a bad person. He is a bad guy.
Definitely, that is not out of the realm of possibility. He's on the verge of becoming a war criminal. But here's something you said at the beginning got me thinking. How about, and this might be too philosophical, but I'd like to hear what your spin is on this. What if some prosecutors got together and they made an argument in court to remove him from office based on the fact that he's violated his oath of office? Remember, to defend, uphold the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution? Well, you can argue that he's undermining the Constitution by all his appointments. That alone.
There are a lot of legal actions that have been petitions to the court, to federal courts, to district courts, even to the Supreme Court. The problem that all of them have so far are things like legal standing. Do they have legal standing to bring this case? Sometimes it's the wording in their petition that gets it thrown out. Sometimes the petition is considered frivolous. It's very, very hard to bring that kind of an action against a president. But there are lots of people trying, and they're having varying degrees of success. But at the end of the day, it really has to be the Republican Party stepping up. And I think that so many people in the Republican Party are dirty that I think that stepping up would literally mean incriminating themselves.
Yeah.
I think that's where we are.
A bunch of talented lawyers getting together and going on national TV and making this argument as if they were in court to convince the American people to get physically active out on the streets and physically derail their local, their state senators and representatives. It's going to have to get physically ugly now, because look at what he's doing. He's governing in that same way. And you can't turn your cheek and pray nice thoughts. It's just not going to work. People are not like that. They don't respect that kind of stuff. They only respect the threat of force or actual force.
I don't disagree with you in principle, but I think that violence plays into their hands. So I think large peaceful protests, large protests outside the offices of representatives, state and federal, large protests at town halls, large nonviolent protests, violence will play into their hands.
Well, I agree with you that violence is what they look forward to because they feel they have the upper hand because they train that all the time. Liberals generally don't train to be violent. They don't train to be physical. So we would have a disadvantage there.
You don't remember the 60s and 70s.
Numbers, just like you said.
You don't remember the 60s and
70s.
Hold on. You don't remember the
60s. I don't know if I'm
seeing
that just yet.
Johnny, you don't remember the 60s and 70s when the terrorists and bombers were lefties. The lefties are capable of that kind of thing. And we have what you might call left-wing anarchists that as soon as there are peaceful protests, they see that as an opportunity for violence. So it's not that the left is incapable of it, and there are cells of left-wing violence, left-wing people that are willing, prepared, and even eager for violence, just like there is on the right. The left is not just a bunch of unadulterated good guys. You've got the spectrum across both sides.
But yeah, don't misunderstand me. I'm not phrasing it that way. Let me say it again. The people on the right are far more predisposed to that because that's the way they're socialized.
Right now.
They're the ones who believe themselves to be the defenders. They're the first ones to show up at the draft office if there's an attack, whether it's in New York or down in Alabama, whereas liberals generally don't. Okay? Now, if you activate people on the right to be physical, I'd be more worried about the extreme right wing than I would the extreme left wing. Extreme left wing, they are very careful about their physical so-called violence. It's not the same thing as a bunch of bubbas from Woodville.
I don't know. You know, at the end of the day, violence is violence. The left-wing violence people wear masks and wear black, and they're anarchists. And the right-wing violence people wear MAGA caps and, fly Confederate flags. Violence is violence, and we have it at both extreme wings.
I respectfully disagree with you there, and before I hang up, I'll just say the reason why is because I don't fear an environmentalist who torches a half a dozen SUVs at a dealership at night. Whereas I would fear a bunch of bubbas trying to be spiteful and going beyond just keying a car paint. They will do things like drag people behind back of pickup trucks and burn crosses and then do other things, kidnapping and lynching people.
Well,
they don't do that on the left.
Not currently. I agree with you.
We never have and we never will. That's just plain facts.
I don't know.
Have a good night.
Yep, you too. All right. Well, thanks for calling, Johnny. Interesting discussion. You're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm Mike Koenig. Bob Gartner is on controls. We do have open lines, and we still have some time, 713-526-5738. And remember, kpft.org is how you can keep us on the air. Go to the donation clicker thing, hyperlink, and contribute whatever you can. We are 100% community-supported. And we are probably the only station in Houston where you can get liberal talk of any kind, progressive talk of any kind, let alone call in. We're a very diverse station. I'm not doing fundraising right now. I'm just mentioning. KPFT.org. Please help support us. Okay, Max, I appreciate your holding on. You're on the air. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Your position on Trump. If we were to ignore the part of your conversation where you all point out the possibility of Trump being extremely dangerous, connections with mafia, et cetera, if we ignored that and say that he has the possibility of getting an L degree, learning.
I'm sorry, getting a what?
An L degree, learning.
Oh, okay.
That he might learn.
I don't think he's capable.
He's been to university,
and he doesn't sound like he's gotten past high school, if that. Sounds like a high school dropout. And he's been to university. He's been to some of the best schools. And he still sounds like a high school dropout.
But he's in New York. We have to accept that.
I'm from New York. I don't speak at a fourth grade level.
Well,
I'm from New York. And I'm about his age, so I have some idea of what the public schools were like.
I hate to see myself defending El Trumpo when I voted for Hillary.
Okay.
On the basis that I couldn't accept the misogynist as our president. Just couldn't. And that's what I think he is.
Among other things.
Yeah, among other things. But these other things are to a great extent hearsay. And I think that you're still wearing this liberal banner that he hates. He hates that kind of liberalism that so badly taints someone that they're like worthless. They're to be blamed, they're to be shamed, they're to be guilty, and we can do vindictive things to them outside of no violence, but we can be as vindictive to them as they can because they are real.
I'm sorry, when you say they and you say we...
El Trumpo types. And I think that's a problem. I mean, he said crazy things off the cuff, etc. Now, the Republican opposition to him, when McCain appeared on ABC and said what he said under those circumstances, you can bet your bottom dollar that McCain and maybe Lindsey and maybe the Bushes and maybe others are ready to pounce when the time is right.
You may be correct, but, you know, Rachel Maddow, after the first couple of weeks of the Trump administration, made a specific statement on her show that since you can't trust anything they say, she's simply going to report on what they do. So going back to John McCain, going back to Lindsey Graham and perhaps some of the other so-called Trump opposers, you know, if you listen to what they say, they talk a good game. If you watch what they do, they vote with their caucus. So, for example, when they eliminated the filibuster to get Gorsuch on the Supreme Court, you had John McCain saying this was the stupidest thing he had ever heard of doing. He thought it was absolutely moronic because he figures someday he'll be in the minority and he'll want that filibuster on the Supreme Court. But you know what? He voted with his caucus. So these guys are talking a good game, but they don't have the guts to follow through with their vote, which, legally speaking, is the only thing that matters. So don't listen so much to what they say. Pay attention to what they do.
How they actually do. Yeah, that's a good point. Excellent point. Now, I'm going around using satire.
Okay.
To poke fun. Like I tell people, have you heard of El Trumbo's latest project?
Okay.
He's training Republican elephants to fly so they can poop on those of us who didn't vote for him. And I get laughs from Trump supporters or not Trump supporters.
Mm-hmm.
They think that's kind of funny to go around saying that. And I say it openly. By somebody and there are strangers around. And I get some, I don't get any what I would call nasty reaction to that kind of satire. And which I think is a good thing that there are many El Trumpo supporters who are not hateful. And they're willing to accept a guy poking fun and satire at him. And he admitted, and I admit that I voted for a winner, Hillary. She got the most popular vote. And they don't, and you know, but there are the types that want to see Hillary under the jail even today. And that, and maybe Hillary deserves some of that conservative.
No, you know, I'm old enough to remember that really the Clintons have been attacked by the right wing all their political lives.
Yeah.
When they talk about a vast right wing conspiracy against them, they're not wrong. If you think about it, there are people 50, 55 years old that have grown up with nothing but the drumbeat of how dishonest the Clintons are. But there has never really been anything proven. You know, it's all the word of mouth, all the hearsay is basically on the conservative side. It's character assassination.
It is. You're right. But there is this incident where Hillary said she flew into Kosovo, corkscrewing in a helicopter amid ground fire. She and Chelsea. And then when a reporter meticulously went through all the television film of her arrival in Kosovo, she ended up having to apologize for misspeaking. It was a sunny, bright day. There was no ground fire. There was no corkscrewing helicopter. And she had to do an apology for misstating the point.
Okay. But now let's compare that to some of the whoppers that Trump has told. And he got elected.
Yeah.
You know, she was at least in a country at war. I have no doubt there may have been the sound of gunshots or artillery fire in the distance. And if you're not familiar with that, it could be alarming. I'm not apologizing for her, but, you know, it's like these are maybes. But Trump has actually defrauded people. You know, his casinos that went bankrupt, Trump didn't lose money on that. He disinvested and sold to investors who figured, oh, it's a Trump deal. We're going to make money on this. He made out great. It's the investors who got screwed. And that happened not by accident. He's a fraud. He's a phony. He's a scam artist. He's a liar. And, I mean, when you compare that to anything that Hillary has done, you can't even, I mean, they're not even on the same scale.
Well, that's, yeah, I'll grant the point. Now, final.
Okay, because I have a long quote I want to read at the end, so I want to have time.
Good. What's wrong with him meeting the Filipino and the South Korean, North Korean?
In principle, two separate questions.
Really, bottom line, what's really wrong?
No, it's two separate questions. Meeting them in the White House. Two separate things. Should he be willing?
I disagree.
Well, you, I mean,
I totally disagree.
You have a right to disagree, but I disagree with you.
Yeah, I heard your argument.
Okay.
But to me, they still represent this rancor that we shouldn't be having. What's wrong with him inviting him in the White House?
It's
just chatting in plain pool in the White House.
In diplomatic language, it makes a difference. In diplomatic speak, it makes an enormous difference.
Yeah,
actually,
human.
It actually
human
no. In diplomatic speak, it's a show of weakness on our part.
No.
I'm just telling you. You can disagree, but I'm telling you.
Yeah, that's bull.
Yeah, you can disagree.
Yeah, I.
That's
do.
Fine, but I'm telling you, in diplomatic speak, it's a sign of weakness to just invite these guys with no prior agreements, no prior discussion, having the record that they have. Meeting them is one thing. Inviting them to your home? That's something else. Anyway, I got to let you go. I'm sorry.
It's not really his home. It's our home.
It's,
it belongs to
it's,
the country.
Okay, then it's our home. He's inviting them into our living room.
Bring them in.
No, I wouldn't have these guys in my living room. I wouldn't have these. I think that they're despicable people. I wouldn't have these guys in my living room. Okay, I got to let you go. Sorry about that. But thank you for calling.
Okay.
All right, take care. All right. My quote today is actually from A Christmas Carol, where the spirit of Christmas present says, "These children are man's, and they cling to me, appealing from their fathers. This boy is ignorance, this girl is want. Beware them both, but most of all, beware this boy, for on his brow I see that written which is doom, unless the writing be erased." And Scrooge says, "Have they no refuge or resource?" And the ghost says, repeating Scrooge earlier, "Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses?" The difference between conservatives and Republicans. Okay, thank you so much for listening. It's been fun. We'll be back next Monday. And this is KPFT 90.1 FM. You've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig and Bob Gartner on controls. Help support this station, kpft.org. Have a great week.
Get involved in democracy. Early voting for the Harris County joint elections began on April 24th and continues until May 2nd. Early voting hours of operation are as follows: 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. from April 24th through April 28th, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. on April 29th, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. on April 30th, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. on May 1st and May 2nd, the last day of early voting. On Election Day, Saturday, May 6th, the polls are open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. For more information, visit harrisvotes.com or call the Election Information Line at 713-755-6965. KPFT Houston.
By joining KPFT's Sustainer program this hour, you can support your local non-commercial station and help KPFT reduce its pledged drives. Rather than giving a yearly gift, sustainers give a monthly donation that continues as long as you want. Giving 5, 20, 100, or more monthly helps change the way KPFT works. Sustainers help us meet our operating expenses without days and days of on-air fundraising. That means less pledge drive, more efficiency, and greater stability for KPFT, regardless of the time of year. Again, visit kpft.org to make a difference today. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.